Welcome to the Dialoguing Life podcast, the podcast designed to get you talking about the interesting and contentious parts of our life together. I'm Peter Nauta, and this is episode number 5. This one is a little different, as it's really two short episodes packaged together. The first 15 minutes is an interview, and then the last 10 minutes is background information about who I am and why I'm doing this podcast. For the first part, Bintul Patel just completed the naturalization process to become a U.S. citizen, so I wanted to talk to her about what it's like. We're really jumping in at the end of a process that takes a number of years. If unfamiliar with it, a simplified overview of the process is that a visa is required to come to the U.S. for an extended period of time, often to study or work. From there, a green card is the next step, which requires sponsorship by a U.S. citizen or company, and can take many years. After the green card, the person can become a naturalized U.S. citizen after waiting 5 additional years. It's this final step that Bintul just completed and, like many Americans, I'm actually not too familiar with the process, so I wanted to sit down and chat with her about it. This podcast is part of the Dialoguing Life community, a place where people can share their experiences and discuss heated topics without the vitriol found on many social media sites. Let's get started. You recently completed the process to become a U.S. citizen.
Yes.
How does that feel?
It feels really great. I'm surprised at how happy I am about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
It doesn't seem like it would be such a big deal, but it is to me.
Good. Good. That's neat. And it's funny because I guess I've known you for a little while now, and you know, you're just another person. I have to remind myself, oh yeah, you weren't born here.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things.
Not
like,
actually,
oh, you're just an American.
No.
All right. So, and you're in your 30s now.
Yeah.
When did you move here?
I moved here when I was 3.
You're 3. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I've been here for 31 years. my parents just moved us all from London because they heard that it was just a better life over here, economically, just raising their kids, and so we eventually ended up in California.
Where'd you go first?
We were sponsored by my uncle, and he lives in Pennsylvania, so we first went to Pennsylvania till I was maybe 6, and then we drove across the country to California because my mom heard that it was a nice place to live from one of her friends who lived in Anaheim, so we ended up in Anaheim first.
Okay. Do you remember much of that, either at 3 moving here?
I remember the road trip.
Oh, yeah.
In the back of my parents' Ford Escort station wagon, the 3 of us sitting there. The station wagon had this cassette tape that came with the car, and they played it over and over because I guess I didn't really know if there was radio or whatever.
So you listened to one cassette from Pennsylvania to Southern California.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun, though. And I remember when we first moved to California, it was really sunny. I remember the first time, not the first time, but when I first played in snow in Pennsylvania. And then I didn't really encounter snow again until we went up to like Big Bear or Arrowhead.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just coming here, and I remember it being sunny all the time, and the school was across the street from our apartment. And it was a fun time.
Cool. What was if you remember what the mood was like when you were driving across the country, were you guys all excited?
I don't really remember. I remember when I think my parents announced that we were driving through Ohio. I was 6. It was a blur.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're kids. My brother was 3. My sister was 9. You know, it's however kids act on a road trip.
Yeah. Yeah. And your sister went through the process, became a citizen.
Yeah,
was it last year?
Last year. Mm-hmm. Hers was really quick. Mine was really long. I had a long waiting period right in the middle where I wasn't really sure what was going on. And I think it was around the time of a government shutdown, so I feel like that pushed back waiting times for everybody.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I should have gotten naturalized, like, last year.
Okay.
But my because the average wait time is 6 months, and it was way longer. Almost a year.
When did you begin the process?
In May. You have to fill out an application, and it's, I think, $700-something, $725. Now they have it online, which they started right after I submitted mine, of course.
Fill it all in paper.
Yeah. So you have to mail it to the right place, and then you have to get your biometrics done, which is just taken a photo and then your thumbprints or your fingerprints. And then you wait for your interview and everything is by mail. So even though they update your case status online, it doesn't actually tell you like your interview date or your ceremony date. You have to wait for a piece of paper in the mail. So I'm currently waiting for the mail so I know which ceremony I'm going to because there are two a day. So
okay.
Yeah.
And you said you started in May. That would be May of 2017?
Yeah.
Okay. And for those listening, we're recording in late March of 2018. Okay, not that long. Did you have to take classes?
No, there's... Okay, so for the interview, they look over your application. They pretty much just check out your background. They had a copy of my birth certificate from England in my file. That was cool. My sister said that they had a copy of our original green card application in her file. I didn't see it in mine, but it was probably there. And then you have a test, the civics test, on civics and history and economy in the U.S.
Okay. Oh, so that's probably where I'm thinking of classes for citizenship. It's if you need to learn that stuff.
I guess so. I didn't really need to learn it. There's a flashcard app you can use. You just have to pass 6 questions out of 10. Mm-hmm. And that's the first thing he did in the interview was ask the questions. And as soon as I got the 6th one right, he said, "Oh, you passed. You're a citizen." And I was like, "Really? That's it? Like, it's really quick." That was the first 5 minutes of the interview. And the rest was just him going through my application, verifying that everything was correct. And that was it. It took 15 minutes total because I don't have any sort of complicated background or anything. Yeah. So it was really easy. And I think he was just happy that it was a really simple case.
Makes everyone's life easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you, obviously growing up here, you went through, you know, the normal high school process and went to college here.
I went back to the UK for college.
Yeah, but you started at Long Beach State, right?
Yeah, I left.
Yeah. But it's important that you went there because that's how you met Kim and otherwise we wouldn't know each other.
Exactly. Only because I went to the wrong class for English and when I finally went to the right class, I had no idea what was going on. And so I turned around behind me, Kim was behind me, and I asked her, "Do we have homework from the last class?" Because I wasn't in it. And that's how our friendship started.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the questions, the 6 that you had to answer.
Yeah.
To get right. Is that, would you consider that like high school level? Because I took it in a different state, but like an American government type class.
I remember learning about American government 8th grade. No. 6th grade. No. Middle school. Some of the questions are really basic, like who was the first president? I remember the first question I got was, what is an amendment, which is a change to the Constitution?
Mm-hmm.
And you're memorizing 100 answers, and then they ask you any 10 from this preset 100 questions that they give to everybody.
Okay.
So you know what the questions are. You just have to memorize the answers. There were more vague questions, like, something about like laws and what does this mean, but it was very vague and it could have been any answer. And there were a few questions that sounded similar to each other. So you had to make sure that you knew the correct answer for each question, the way it was phrased. Mm-hmm. But I didn't get any of those in the interview, so I was okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, it was as long as you study the flashcards, you'll pass. I think that's what really worried me the most was passing the exam. Because I'm the type who wants to pass everything. I want to get 100. I don't want to get 60.
Right.
But they stopped asking after the 6th question, so I got 100.
Nice.
Yeah.
Were you nervous going into it?
I was only nervous about the test. I wasn't nervous about... Because I knew I would become naturalized. It's called naturalization when you're becoming a citizen rather than citizenship by birth. So when I was becoming naturalized, I knew I would pass and it would happen. But yeah, just the questions was the hard part.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess with your background, there's obviously no criminal record for you or your immediate family or anything like that.
My interviewer was talking about how he gets people in who bring their lawyers in with them and it takes a couple hours because they have felonies on their record and their lawyers are arguing that, oh, this was, you know, this is taken care of, you know, they're eligible again, blah, blah, blah. So.
Wow.
So he's like, "I'm glad this was so fast because now I have a few minutes from your time to spend on their time, even not the day."
Wow. So you didn't have to deal with getting an immigration lawyer or anything like that?
Oh, no. I have a lawyer friend. I asked her to look over my application and it was fine. And she said, "This is so easy. Like, you don't have anything to worry about. So I said I wasn't really like, I wasn't worried about whether I would get it or be not denied or anything.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So are there any misconceptions, either misconceptions you've had or misconceptions you've heard from other people that you would clear up about it?
The one thing I've heard is that people think that they have to give up their citizenship with the other country that they belong to.
Yeah, I've heard that myself.
For the UK and the US, they have this kind of unspoken agreement that we can still have both passports.
Mm.
And it's the same with Canada and the US. It really depends on the country's relationship with each other. I know that Japan and US, you can't have both. You have to pick one or the other. My friend had to go through that. So I still have British passport. I just call myself a dual citizen now. So
that's cool. We may have covered this already, but any advice for somebody who's going to be going through the process?
It's worth doing it. I've been eligible since I was 18, but I didn't really have a reason to until now. Because now I feel like I should vote, you know, as a resident of this country. Like, I need to contribute to this country.
Mm-hmm.
So that finally got my butt in gear to actually apply. And to be patient, I had this unexpected wait period that I wasn't expecting. And, like, it's going to get processed. Just don't worry about it. And just memorize those flashcards and you'll be fine. And don't commit any felonies.
Oh, yeah. don't commit a felony.
Yeah.
Good advice. So the ceremony is next month. It's in April. When you complete the ceremony, and so it's, you know, sort of the official, yeah, you're...
Yeah, you get a certificate of naturalization. It's this big piece of paper. Yeah.
Is that going on your wall?
It's going to be filed away with my birth certificate.
There you go.
Yeah, but it's your proof of naturalization that you might need if you did, like, a federal job, I guess, or something.
Okay. Cool. So what's the first American thing you're going to do after you get that?
They have registration booths outside the ceremony to register with political parties.
Hmm.
So I will be walking up to the Democratic tent and signing up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Registering to vote.
Yep.
All right. And I suggest you go eat a big American burger and drink some American beer.
Yep. I need to find somewhere. It's downtown, I'm sure. There's a lot of places around.
Yeah. These conversations I like to end with sort of a high low and a lesson learned. What would you say is going through the naturalization process, that your low moment?
I was really worried about, because I'm going back to the UK in May for a visit, so I was worried that I wouldn't get my American passport in time, because you can't, once you go to the ceremony, they take away your green card, and then you have to get a passport.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't come back into the U.S. without either American passport or green card.
Right.
So I was worried that my interview would be pushed way too far, that I would need to get like an emergency one day passport or whatever, but that worked out. And then so just the waiting, the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just their notification process needs to be better. They should really just put everything online, like the interview times and dates, instead of notifying, oh, this piece of mail is coming to you sometime in the next week.
Yeah, that seems very strange.
Pointless. Like, you get the notification that you're getting the piece of mail. Yeah.
Just tell me.
Yeah.
Maybe save a few bucks by not mailing everybody. Yeah. What was the high point?
In my interview when he said, oh, you passed. And I was so happy when I walked out of that interview. I was like, oh, I'm a citizen. I'm American now.
That's great. And that was it last month?
It was 3 weeks ago, two weeks ago, maybe.
So you're still riding that high?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. what was the biggest lesson you've learned?
It's totally worth doing. Don't put it off. If you can become a citizen, just do it. I thought it would have been a big deal because of, like, my identity and stuff, but just do it, you know? You should do your duty to your country, especially the one you're living in and paying taxes in, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know you've spent some time living back in the UK. You went to college there, yeah, and everything, but you've definitely spent more time living here.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm happy to do jury duty, you know. That's my duty as an American. You know, people complain about it, but if that's what I need to do, then I'll do it.
Nice. My grandmother felt the same way. She came over from England in the... Mm-hmm. My grandfather was in the Air Force, and he met her over in England, and that they got married and came over here. Came and got married. I don't remember the exact order. But yeah, that was her thing. And she felt like when she got jury duty, that would be mean she was really
an American. Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know if jury duty's the thing in the UK. Never really looked into it. But it's definitely an American thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to do it last month.
Yay.
Any parting words of wisdom?
I'm very happy now. Very proud to be American, British American.
Right on. All right. Well, I don't think I have any other questions for you. Thank you for sharing your experience.
Oh, thank you. That was fun.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Bintul Patel about the naturalization process. In 2014, the LA Times did an editorial series about citizenship to look at its many elements and encourage those who are eligible to become citizens. Links to those articles, along with notes and discussion about this episode, can be found at dialoguing.life/5. Given how smoothly everything went for her, this episode was a bit short. So, I'll tack on some bonus material about myself. I don't think I need a full episode, but I do want to introduce myself and explain the motivations for this podcast. So with that, here's some information about me. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Now that we're a few episodes in, I'll take a few minutes to introduce myself. A lot of interview-focused podcasts include known personalities like comedians or journalists. Since I'm neither of those, you may be wondering about me and my perspective. I'm a husband and a father. I was raised in a Christian home and have lived in a few different states and now call California home. I haven't traveled extensively, but have visited a few countries very different from this one. I'm registered without any party affiliation and consider myself a moderate that leans liberal. I have a physics degree and have worked most of my career in the software industry, focusing mainly on training and implementation. I don't have it all figured out and have certainly had my share of missteps getting to this point. A key element to how I view the world is that there's always a chance that there's more to the story, something I don't know. My opinions are based on the information that I have received, and if there's more information that comes to light, my opinion may change. This impacts how I treat people, too, in that I give them the benefit of the doubt and assume that they're coming from a place of good intentions, that they may know something that I don't, which is often the case. The beginnings of this project came at a time when a politically charged situation burst into the mainstream, back when that only happened a few times a year, and I was disappointed at the response to it that I saw from some of my friends and family. While I normally stay out of those things on Facebook, I at one point posted a meme that reflected my thought process. My wife was disappointed with the method I used to chime in, and, as you might expect, I only ended up butting heads with people that disagreed with me rather than having any productive dialogue. And then a couple of days later, my second daughter was born. This meant that I didn't have the energy or desire to continue any of these exchanges, but I did end up with a lot of time to think during midnight feedings. I came to the conclusion that I want to address the things that divide us in a constructive way and encourage real and meaningful dialogue, to do my small part to make the world my girls grow into a little bit better. Outrage sells these days, and there's plenty of it to go around. With the clickbait and meme space driven by this outrage, a lot of issues get oversimplified. I want to expand them, to highlight details and nuance that might get overlooked, and to move away from outrage, calming tempers, and bringing people together. For this podcast, my goal is to bring up interesting ideas, potentially from sources and perspectives you may not normally encounter. Two of my primary influences are the Nerdist Podcast and Humans of New York. The Nerdist Podcast, which was recently rebranded as ID10T, features conversations with pop culture celebrities. I really appreciate and respect the type of conversations they have. These aren't leading questions trying to get sound bites, but rather probing questions to get to know the guest, who they are, and how they got where they did. That's the style of conversation I'm going for. I want to ask intelligent questions and draw out more information or add context to make the situation more understandable and relatable. Regarding Humans of New York, that's a Facebook page that essentially goes around New York City and asks people about themselves. Generally, it's just a paragraph or two, but quite deep and interesting. It really shows the human element of people in all kinds of different circumstances. Recently, he has traveled to some of the more contentious places in the world to learn more about the people there, in refugee camps or countries that have been in the news. What I hope to replicate from him is that even if you don't agree with the show's guest, you can understand where they're coming from and see an issue with more complexity, and see the humanity in people whose lives may be quite different from your own. Another way to look at it is the friends and family you have on Facebook to post things that you really disagree with, and do so in a way that signals, I'm right, and you're an idiot if you think differently. Because most of those people, at least for me, are a whole lot more complex, nuanced, and fun to be around in person. Sure, we may disagree, but we still like and respect each other, and that's really the foundation of our relationship. I want the podcast to feel like that kind of in-person conversation. For example, my father and father-in-law are definitely on opposite sides of the political spectrum. But generally, when one of them starts complaining about whatever dumb thing the other political party did recently, it turns into both of them laughing and agreeing on a point they can both complain about. I should point out that this is not a current events podcast. There are other people more qualified than I to give hot takes or explain context to the latest news stories making the rounds. These conversations will lend perspective and commentary to various news items here and there, but each episode should have a timeless quality to it, so that it's still relevant and interesting in a year or two. And I definitely don't want this to be a political podcast, although some episodes will have a political element to them. A phrase I've heard a fair amount lately is that politics is downstream of culture. I really like that idea, that culture and society are the important things to discuss and figure out, and then political policies and debates can come from that. I'll make an analogy here based on my experience setting up software in business environments. Before the system is built, there needs to be an analysis done with various people involved. I'll talk to the people who do the work on a day-to-day basis to learn about what they're doing, what frustrates them, and what they'd like to do better. Then I'll get the perspective of a manager, who's less interested in how it all works, but wants to make sure that it makes life better for the people that do, and needs some oversight into what's going on. And then there's the IT team, who wants to make sure everything is secure and stable, but most importantly, just wants to be left alone and not get calls from users complaining that things aren't working. I see politics as that implementation. The needs of the people, their perspectives, frustration, and goals, should be the driving factor. That perspective is what I want to focus on, to dialogue about life, as the podcast Insider named. And in so doing, I want to encourage more dialogue. The website is built in order to have conversations, respectful dialogue, in ways that seem unlikely to happen on Facebook and similar sites. I want you all to chime in and dialogue about life, about the experiences that shape your perspective. And I want a community where it's okay for people to disagree with one another while still maintaining respect and being happy to have another conversation again in the future. This site really is about you, the members of the dialoguing community. Disagree with something you hear on the podcast? Come talk about it. Have something to say? Jump in and make your voice heard. If you have ideas about how to improve the show, I'd love to hear them. If you have an idea for a podcast guest or want to be on yourself, by all means, let me know. You can reach out on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Dialoguing Life, links to which can be found on the website. You can also send an email to feedback@dialoguing.life. Note that dialoguing is spelt with a U. I'll wrap up with an anecdote about a dialogue session that has really stood out to me over the years, the kind of spontaneous conversation where people let their guard down and you really learn a lot. It was at the end of a trip to a country that's both geographically and culturally very different from here. I was chatting with a woman that was comfortable talking, perhaps because I would soon be gone, but hopefully at least in part because I'm a good listener. She explained to me the frustrations of why her marriage fell apart and the social pressures and stigma she faced because of it. It struck me that even though our cultures were so different, many of the same frustrating issues are present. It was really a fascinating conversation, and I'm glad I was available as an outlet for her to open up. It really opened my eyes to the fact that most people have similar motivations. We want to earn enough to be comfortable. If we have kids, we want them to succeed and surpass whatever successes we may achieve. Across states and across cultures, we have a whole lot in common. I'd like to put more focus on that and spend less time arguing over the few things that are different. Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, you can subscribe to this podcast and get all the new episodes automatically through whatever your favorite service is, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. And when you do, please rate and review the show to help other people find it. Dialoguing Life is a community for productive conversations, where people can share their experiences and discuss heated topics without the vitriol found on many social media sites. Join the conversation at dialoguing.life. Thanks for listening.